Hey there. Before we get going today, I want to give you guys a few discount codes for our products and our show sponsors. So please don't just zip through this. If you're listening to the podcast, we at Hardwick Life want to reward you for your loyalty. So take 25% off your order of any of our products at hardwick.life by using the code HardwickFF25. That's HardwickFF25. Because we consider you friends and family. That's FF. That's Hardwick FF25. And the website is hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but it's hardwick.life. In case you've missed it, we've lowered the price of that Lose Like a Lineman and Lose Like a Lady program all the way down to just $25. That's a one-time fee. It's not monthly. It's not recurring. And yes, because you listen to this podcast, that Hardwick FF25 code will take 25% more off of that. So if you want me to do the math for you, that's $18.75. And the Facebook support group is now $0. Why? Because I get a bigger kick out of seeing people reclaim their health and reclaim their lives than I do making money. So why not make it free, Nick? That's what you may ask. Because I do believe it has to sting a little bit in order for you to make it happen. If it's free, you're going to treat it like it's free, which means it's going to end up in the recycle bin. The psychological term for that would be called the opt-in. Also, thank you to the show sponsors and products that I've been using for years now. Bubs Naturals and Julian Bakery, both are tremendous products. I highly recommend them both. For 20% off of Bubs Naturals, use the code HARDWICK20 at BubsNaturals.com. And for 10% off of Julian Bakery, use code Nick Hardwick. That's just my name. Nick Hardwick at JulianBakery.com. And lastly, if you love this show and it benefits your life in any way at all, even if it's a tiny way, please rate and review us wherever you listen to the show. Something as simple as a 5-star rating, not asking too much, and a love this show, Jamie is the best, will help boost our rating so more people can see us. And who knows, maybe their life gets better too. Thank you, guys. Now let's get to the show. All right, guys, welcome in Hardwick Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. We got an awesome, awesome guest today. I am super honored to be joined by a legend in the fitness community. His name is Clark Bartram. Clark is a lifestyle coach. He's a fitness professional, and he's got quite the impressive resume. He's a 58-year-old former Marine. He's a fitness model. He's appeared on the cover of more than 130 fitness publications, and he's helped thousands of people transform their lives through fitness over the course of his 30-plus year career. Transforming other people's lives has become his life's purpose, and he dedicates his time to helping men over 50 live in their healthiest body. His approach aims to make fitness sustainable for men of all skill levels, and he teaches 5 lifestyle principles that we're going to talk about: mindset, meals, movement, community, and supplementation in his fitness app that he believes are key to staying healthy and fit. Bartram's goal, he says, is to provide an entry-level way into fitness that is manageable, seamlessly moving his followers along to the next level of their fitness journey. You can check out his work at 6weeksolution.nanotest.co. That's 6, like S-I-X, W-E-E-K, solution.nano, N-A-N-O, test.co. Follow him at Clark Bartram. That's C-L-A-R-K-B-A-R-T-R-A-M. You can do that on the IG. I am, it's a super honor to have this guy on. I actually used to watch him in the 90s, and I didn't know this until I started doing a little background work getting ready for this podcast. I used to watch him in the 90s on Kiana's Flex Appeal, which used to air on ESPN. So really cool that all that comes full circle. That was like the beginning of my fitness journey, and just really happy to have him join us. And I know he's going to pass down a lot of wisdom. 58 years old. You got to go check this guy out. I mean, he is incredibly fit, doing some really cool things. He looks great. He moves better, more importantly, and he's doing some trick shots, and he's just a really incredible guy. So I know you guys are going to enjoy this podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please do share this with your friends. Rate it, review it, whatever you got to do. It would really help us out. And I guess the goal for me is, like Clark, it's to help people of all skill levels, wherever you come to fitness, wherever you're coming to health from, to make advancements in your life and to improve your life and to hopefully at the end of this thing, be really healthy. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
What's going on, Clark?
Not much, my brother. How you doing, man?
I am fantastic. Yeah, really honored to have you join me. This is super cool for me.
I'm honored to be here, brother. It's super cool for me as well. Look at you, how handsome I are and lean and just
hey,
what
I
a
know,
transformation.
Isn't it? It's crazy what you can do if you just really just make a decision, commit to that decision, and kind of figure things out along the way. It's amazing.
Make a decision and commit to the decision. That's the key right there. Most people never commit to the decision that they've thought they made, right? That's the big difference right there is action takers, man.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny, like I get a lot of people, I've got my own weight loss program or whatever, and people come in and they go, well, you have the dedication, the discipline because you were a professional athlete. And a lot of, I think I was a professional athlete because I was able to do that. I was able to make a decision, be very decisive, and then just go all in and not look back and not second guess and not doubt, not question, just this is the process. These are the steps that it takes to get there. And if I do those, I give myself a chance at success.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people are deceived by this concept of being a professional athlete and the discipline it takes to get there, because I'm sure you've met a ton of guys, probably more than people would even realize, that don't necessarily have that much discipline. And they still made it to the top just because they were extremely athletic or they made it through a crack somehow and they got to a position that you're looking like, how'd he end up here? You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And those are the guys that would frustrate you the most. Those are the guys that never achieve their full potential. And really they don't get there because they didn't understand the process, the discipline. They weren't willing to make that commitment. And they were so frustrating. I felt like as a teammate and a guy that was not incredibly talented, but worked really hard and had the baseline kind of requisite level to get there. You would look at some of these guys go and think, man, what could you be if you were to give it everything? And how much money could you make? Or what kind of career would you have? And people should be talking about you for decades, yet they're going to talk about you for 2 weeks and talk about what a bust you were. It's unfortunate.
I think it's a great question that we could all ask ourselves is what could we be if we dedicated ourselves to whatever cause it is that we're trying to do? And, you know, for what we're talking about here, it's obviously fitness, right? And we see it all the time. I see people and I'm like, if you just commit to a process, you will get the results that you're looking for. I'm not special. I'm not different. I'm not unique.
I don't know what it takes, and it is getting people over the hump. But for me, I was kind of thinking about this morning. I've got a uniquely positive outlook on life, and I've got deep faith that if I do the work today, that somehow, some way that's going to pay off. And I never know exactly what it's going to look like, but I do think if you do the right things now, and maybe you suffer a little bit now, that over the long haul, man, it's surely going to pay off because it has to. It seems like that's the way the universe should work.
Well, and it's also the way the human body works. If you think about it, I always tell this to people when I'm trying to encourage them or inspire them or motivate them to move in a direction that they're not currently moving in. The human body is the most adaptive organism on the known universe, and it will respond to the demands that you put on it. And if you're not putting any demands on it, it will accommodate you by getting heavier, by being deconditioned and not being able to function highly like you and I want to in life. So it's a process of belief, in my opinion, that all we need to do is believe, regardless of our genetic predisposition, regardless of anything that we may have convinced ourselves that we're not capable of. Like for me now, it's the age factor. And I want to change the narrative for people as it relates to what it should look like to age. Like I'm 58. I feel great. I function at a very high level and I'm proud of that. But I want to be the example to people of what is possible. Because again, it's not like I'm some anomaly. You know, maybe I have some genetics, right? But I don't think that separates me from people so much that they can't accomplish something similar to what I have at my age.
It is remarkable. I mean, looking at you, 58 years old, and I went through some of the clips yesterday and you're doing trick shots and, you know, throw an incredibly good spiral.
Oh, thank you.
And you can long snap, and you can throw snowballs and lacrosse balls and golf balls, like with wild accuracy. You're doing trick shots. And part of it really is, I guess, just to show people like, hey, this is fun. This is life. I'm out here. And like, come on, you see what, and I guess that's the whole deal is, you know, physically looking at you, it's inspiring, but then physically watching you be able to still do things that really, 25-year-old, a 30-year-old man, probably a lot of us can't do anymore. That to me is, it's super inspiring. Tell me about this trick shot and when this came around. I mean, it's obviously not something that you can just pick up and be like, hey, I'm going to throw a really good spiral and be accurate with it. Like, have you been doing this for a while? What's going on with this? It's awesome.
No, it happened from TikTok of all places. So I'm scrolling around on TikTok one day and I see this guy doing these trick shots. And I can tell by the way he's moving that he has used his human body and just got every ounce of athleticism out of it. And I'm like, who is this guy? I know who this guy is, man. He's somebody, right? He's an athlete. He's somebody who has really just, like I said, squeezed every ounce of life out of his body. And he's still doing these trick shots. And I look and I'm like, oh, that's Brad Johnson, Super Bowl champion quarterback. And right here is his Wheaties box that he sent me. And I saw him doing these trick shots and I immediately messaged him and he got back to me within seconds. And I had him on my Zoom call, which I want to have you on here as soon as we can get you on to inspire these men that I coach.
Awesome.
On the Zoom call, I was sitting right here and I said, after this Zoom call, I'm going out to the football field and I'm going to bounce a football off the ground and put it into a trash can. And I'm challenging you. And I got out there and I thought to myself, why did I just do this? Why did I challenge an NFL champion, Super Bowl champion quarterback to throwing a football? Am I stupid? And the answer is yes. But I like to challenge myself. So that started this ongoing, it's not even a challenge because there's no challenge. This guy's an extremely elite athlete and I'm just a regular guy out here trying to inspire people. But that's really how it started. So we go back and forth all the time and he's such a kind human and he's so humble and he's just out there doing work and having fun, man, and still getting athleticism out of his aging body. And we just encourage each other and inspire each other to get out there. And he'll report back to me, Clark, I've been out there for 4 hours today trying to get this shot. I'm like, so was I. We're sweaty and dirty.
That's awesome.
We're just having fun.
Oh, that's so good. And what a great excuse to be outside and to move. I think I look for that. I mean, I'm in Indiana now, so I was in San Diego a long time. And then I'm in Indiana and it gets cold in the winter here and we go out for walks every day. I can't wait until it snows so I can get outside for 3 hours and shovel my driveway. Like that's a real threat. It's just a great excuse. You know, it's work. Yeah. But it's a great excuse to just be outside and put this body to use. I mean, we do all this work to make it look good and operate at a high level. It's like now at some point, the rubber's got to meet the road here. It's not just all for form.
Right. You know, you said something just now that I think it's important for people to really hear and understand. Look good and function at a high level. Most people don't add that function at a high level statement to looking good. Our Western culture is so fixated on aesthetics and the way we look. Of course, I want to look good, but if I look good and don't function well, it really doesn't make any sense. Having beach muscles, as they refer to them, isn't necessarily something that's going to benefit you other than somebody going, wow, you look good. It's like, okay, great. What can I do with that? Can I run, jump, and play? Can I have fun with my grandkids when I finally get one? Can I still go out and perform things that I've been known to do in my life? You know, those are the things that I want to do. And I really want to just be the guy that is, you know, we got one life. You know, I had this made for a reason. And I want to enjoy each day that I have available to me. And that's being able to function.
Clark, for people that don't know you, give me a quick backstory on you, how you got to where you are. And it's funny, as I was going through getting ready for this, I didn't realize one of my first introductions into fitness you were a part of with Kiana's Flex Appeal. I had no idea. And that was like, I was 15 years old when that came out. And I'm telling you, every weekend I was like, but it was like, you know, beautiful women, beautiful men working out. And I was like, oh, cool. Look what you can do with your body.
yeah, that wasn't a bad job to have. And I've been fortunate, Nick, to have had made an entire career in the fitness industry. So I grew up in Canton, Ohio, and joined the Marine Corps at age 17. And I did it because I really wanted the biggest challenge for myself. And I saw that dress blue uniform and I'm like, this is what I want to do and who I want to be. So I excelled in the Marine Corps and did really well and decided I was either going to stay or get out. And it just didn't work out for me to stay in. So I got out and got involved in the gym business. You know, 24-hour fitness, it was family fitness back then. I needed a job. So I went in, I got a job as a trainer and then worked my way through the gym business and owned a couple of gyms and have been around it forever. And then one day a buddy of mine came to me and they called me CB. They said, CB, you need to compete in a bodybuilding contest. I'm like, I don't want to look like these big muscle heads. I just want, you know, good ab muscles and biceps. That's all that really matters. But they convinced me, I excelled there. And then I was backstage at a bodybuilding show one day and I saw all these photographers taking pictures of a guy. And I'm like, what's so special about him? I want them to take pictures of me. So I set out to do that and excelled in that and landed a couple covers throughout the years. And then the Kiana thing came along. I auditioned for the show, ended up getting it. They called me back again. And she was sitting there looking at me one day. She's like, you know, you're really good at this. And there were people on the show that recognized that I could do it as well and offered me their work if I wanted to shoot a pilot episode for my own show. And I did that and got my own show and got a show on Armed Forces Network and did some work with the SEALs. So it just continued to snowball. And here I am today, decades later, still doing it. Like this magazine right here, you know, is recent.
Look at that.
I feel fortunate that I can still get on magazines. And people always ask me, is that Photoshop? No, it's not. This is real life, you know? So...
How close do you stay to photo shoot ready? I mean, within how many pounds?
So here is how I made my career, Nick. Just like in the NFL, you have to be ready, right? So if you're on the couch, as they say, and a center goes down and they know Nick Hardwick is ready to go, you need to be ready to go. So that's how I patterned my career in the industry, because one day I was helping a photographer on the other side of the camera carry lights because I really wanted to learn about how to be a good model, as weird as that might sound. Yeah. I would watch other people.
That's really smart.
Yeah, so I heard the guy say this, and this is what clicked in my mind. He said, I'll call you the next time I'm in shape. I was like, what? What if I'm always in shape? What if I'm the guy that's always in shape? So I started going around and telling photographers, hey, I'm Clark Bartram and I'm always in shape. And there was one in particular who lived in Encinitas, Ralph DeHaan. And this was before I ever got into a magazine. So I decided not to be the typical bodybuilder that got big and then got ripped and got big and got ripped. I was just going to stay ripped all the time. So someone asked me this question the other day. I've been 185 pounds for the last, I don't know, 2 decades. I like literally, it doesn't matter how big I look or how small I look or how ripped I look. I'm 185. So I'm within days of being ready to do a shoot. It's a matter of tanning. And I had one time the photographer at Ironman magazine called me up. He said, hey, I need you for a shoot. I think it was Mike O'Hearn, wasn't ready. And he said, when could you be ready? I said, how's this afternoon? He's like, shut up, man. You know, you're cocky. Just be here next week. So that was really what set me apart, because the reality is out of all of the magazine covers that I've done, maybe I've been called 5 times specifically to be on a cover. The other, however many, was because somebody else wasn't ready. And that to me was important. So I still live by that today. I want to be able to take off my shirt at any point and be ready to go.
Yeah. And it's not just for the photo shoot. I think the bigger point in all of it is, yeah, you're ready for the photo shoot, but that's a little side thing. But in reality, like you're just live your life to the point where you exercise right, the nutrition's right, the sleep's right. All of these things are in alignment. So you stay right where you need to be all the time. And you're showing everybody that it's sustainable. And I think that's the powerful part about all of it, is that it is sustainable, and it's not something that, yeah, I got to go. I need 3 weeks to get ready to bulk up and to just tighten down real quick and suck all the sodium, but you know, do all the tricks, the bodybuilding tricks. that's not the game that you're playing at all. You're playing a lifelong game, and that's powerful.
Well, and that's the way it should be. And sustainable is the word that I want everyone to really walk away from this with and look at everything that you are considering as to whether or not it's sustainable. So let's say, for example, like the ketosis diet is really big these days, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. It will work. But what everyone needs to ask themselves is, okay, can I stay in ketosis for the rest of my life? Do I want to stay in ketosis? Is it worth staying in ketosis for the rest of my life? Because if you bust your butt for 6, 8, 12 weeks, whatever time period you need to get to where you want to go in that state, what will happen when you come out of that state? Will your body rebound and come back and gain a bunch of weight? What will happen? And this is what some people don't consider when they put in all of that hard work, which I respect tremendously, but not if you're only going to go back to what you were. And what good is a picture? Like, I can't tell you the amount of people. Matter of fact, just the other day in a Walmart parking lot, this guy yells out, "Hey, aren't you, you're that guy. What's your name again?" You know, so we talked, and this is a famous thing that I hear, Nick, is, "I used to look like you." It's like, okay.
Did you?
I mean, come on, did you really? And maybe he did, but what good is a photo? What good is used to be? What good is I was and I'm a, like, what are you like now? That's really what matters. Because today is what we have, not yesterday and not even tomorrow. It's like today.
What are some things, I guess, from a physical standpoint, from a nutrition standpoint, that you've learned and you've changed your philosophies on over the years?
Well, from a physical standpoint, that's a question people ask me all the time. It's like, Clark, now that you're getting older, how has your workout changed? And I don't think it's changed all that much, because I've always been somebody who has focused on what I can do, not being extreme. Like, I don't lift heavy. I never really lifted heavy. I'm a big believer that I could go in any gym in America, and you probably see this as well. I could go in any gym in America, take any guy that's really pushing himself beyond his ability, cut his weight in half, show him proper form and technique, tempo, in mind-muscle connection, things like this, and get him a better result at the end of the day. That's right. How I've always approached it. And I'm even more aware of that now that I'm older. And that slips right into nutrition as well. I understand what I can eat, when I can eat it, and I'm very instinctive to that. I don't know if you saw my Instagram stories yesterday, but I showed this $25 salad that I got after the gym. And I got the salad because I knew my body was craving everything that I put into that salad, the fruit, the vegetables, the quinoa, the seeds, and all of the beautiful things that I was putting into that. I ate it, I felt good, and I felt nourished, and I didn't feel guilty afterwards. So we have to really just approach each day with, you know, what we're doing and what we need to be doing later down the line, not eating according to a plan that somebody gave us. You just got to eat chicken and broccoli right now. I don't want to live that way. Nice. I want to be instinctive and understand what my body needs. And that does take time.
It was the $25 salad from Whole Foods?
No, it was from Sprouts or same place, yeah. Right? Where they weigh it. And I'm like, they're very smart about that. They put the heavy stuff in there.
Yeah, everything, man. I love, that's a fun family restaurant outing for us is we go to Whole Foods, but boy, is it ever expensive. And you could do so much more for less if you just buy it and bring it home rather than put it on the scale. But I think that's the instinct portion of it. When you know you've gotten to the place where you need to be and it's sustainable, when you can start listening to your body and giving it what it's telling you that it needs rather than your mind going, "Oh, that looks really good. Well, I'll have that." No. It's my body's driving this operation instead of my brain. And I know it's impossible to parse out the mind and the body. They are the same thing, but it takes a long time to get people to that place to be instinctive about their food. How do you go about that process of teaching your folks that we start here and we want to get to the place where I can just listen to my body and understand what it wants?
Right. So a lot of men come to me, and these men are older, right? And we hear these sayings like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks and all this sort of stuff. But that's just another lie that we've bought into, because I see the evidence, Nick, every single day of men changing their lives with these five principles that I teach, and I have them everywhere all over the place. And they are as follows in this order: mindset, meals, movement, community, and supplementation. And the reason I put them in that order is because most people come to me and they say, isn't nutrition the single most important thing in getting in shape and losing weight or getting ripped or whatever? No, it's not. Because you could go Google whatever diet you want to get, and these diets will work. But if your mind is not set to eat that way, as long as you need to eat that way, and hopefully it's a sustainable choice like we just talked about, nothing, it doesn't matter if your mind is not set. So you get the mindset like, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm 58. I want to get ripped. I want to do whatever. My mind is set. I'm going to do this. I'm taking action like we had talked about earlier, and I'm committing to this process. So then I teach them how to eat. Then I teach them how to exercise and do these compound movements that we know about that will elevate their testosterone and things like that. So I help them understand that there's a different and, I guess, more technical way of thinking as it relates to getting the results that you want. Because we can play and get a result. Like, you could go off and play football and block that way and get a result. But if you understand that you need to block that way and then go down another level and take care of the next guy, you're doing things that are going to benefit you more in the long run. Right. So I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but
yeah, I guess when you're building out your program, was it hard for you to go, okay, how can I make this teachable for somebody who's coming in at a very basic knowledge level, when you're obviously transcended to the place where it is just kind of very natural now?
Well, the really good thing about me, Nick, is I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I'm really not. And I say this all the time to my guys, because I can take very complex conversations and reduce them down to layman's terms, because that's how I think. I'm like, what's the best way for me to apply this to my life? I don't care what you know. I think the industry's gotten way too smart for itself. Like, I don't even like using the word macros. Macros. Well, it grosses. It's like, it's food, it's protein, it's fat, it's carbohydrates. We never talked like that back when I was bodybuilding, you know, and right. All these words that people want to use to position themselves as authorities and experts and all of that just disgust me, in all honesty. Yep. So I am able to just talk to my guys in a way. It's like, listen, man, just do the work. Just do the work. You know the old saying, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. That's right. What guys see in me when they come to me is, I actually care. I love people. I love these men. I am committed to them. I'm a servant leader. I'm here to serve them. And, you know, when you're dealing with guys that are extremely successful, they've raised families, they've owned businesses, they've worked for companies for decades, they've committed to a life, but they put themselves on the back burner and they believed a lot of lies. Now suddenly they're approached with the guy they saw on TikTok or Instagram, and I'm throwing footballs, I'm lifting up my shirt, I'm going, yeah, let's go. I'm like, first they probably hate me, but then they see me and they're like, this guy won't go away. Then they connect with me and they're like, this guy's legitimate, he's real, he actually cares, but he's going to tell me the truth. Now by the time I've gotten to this place with them, I can talk to them any way I want, because they know I love them. And some people, you know, from being coached, man, you got to grab them by the face mask and shake them up and go, come on, man, what's wrong with you? And you're yes. like, yeah, you're right, I'm acting like a, you know.
Yeah. By the way, I had to tell you, I showed my kids your video yesterday and they didn't want to turn it off. They're like, show us more. Because the videos keep going. It's like, come on, Dad, show it. They loved it. They were like, this is like, dude, perfect. This is awesome. Yeah. So
they show them the Batman. Batman. Maybe they'll like that. I don't know if they like comics or not, but
oh God, do they ever? Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'll definitely show them that. It's super cool. Yeah, I will show them that. And I think you're right. It's like, it does disgust me too with how it's the experts that want to come in that want to give you all the data and all the analytics. Like I say data and analytics, because in the sports world, that's like, it's the new thing. You got to have an analytics team to tell you when to go for it on fourth and one, or when to kick a field goal, or when to do this. Like, get the geeks out of here. You know, like what's the practical nature of this? You know, if I go for it on fourth and one, because the analytics said I've got a 9% greater chance of winning the game, but if I miss it, I've got an 8% greater chance of losing the game. I'm going for it on fourth and one. The Chargers did this. That's why it drove me wild. Fourth and one from their own 18 in a basically playoff game. And they gave the other team 3 points. Like, for me, that's just, you know, we're using analytics to try to, like you said, create an expert nature around somebody, or to try to put your place up at the table, when in reality, it's confusing the hell out of everybody, you know, and people who are coming to this, who are not health and fitness professionals, who haven't done all the reading and the research and all this stuff, they're coming into it and they're going, I don't even know where to start. So why would I start? It's just so confusing. I can't get it straight. And that's what bothers me the most. It's like, we have now said you can't have carbs, you can't eat fruit, you know, you can't have bread. It's like, what can't, tell me what we can have again. You know, I should eat only meat. I should. It's like, what? And how did we get to this place? It's so confusing for a lot of people.
It's getting really bad. There's some stuff I see on TikTok now. People are attacking every single thing. This guy's attacking spinach and kale and all of these things. And I'm like,
it's all raspberries today. Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And then too, on the other side of things, like every silo of fitness has its own deal. So people don't even know, well, what's the best? It's like, well, what's the best is what you'll do. You know, whatever you enjoy doing is what's the best for you. You know, what diet you'll stick to is the one that's going to work in the long run. That's what's going to work for you. So I love the approach. And I love to, because I watched the documentary you did for NanoTest. And the community that you've built and the interaction that you have with these men, it's real. That's real stuff. And I think that's super cool. And I think it's also rare that you buy somebody's program and they want to meet you. They want to help you. They want to bring you through this thing because you care. That's awesome.
Yeah. When I was standing in that driveway and looking at these men running up, I mean, this emotion just hit me in my gut. And as I was sitting there on my porch and I'm like, they're running up my effing driveway. You know, what is this? Like, I was seriously like, is this happening right now? Did I just go off and throw a football into a trash can and get somebody's attention on YouTube, have them see this program? Then they get the program, then they come into the community, then they connect with me. Then all of a sudden we develop a relationship. They decide to get on an airplane from Canada, fly all the way here, or Hawaii, fly all the way here, stand at the end of my driveway till they're told, run up there and go shake his hand or hug him. I'm like, what the heck? You know, and that's the way it should be, because everything in life is about relationship. And there are a lot of people out there trying to get people's money, and they'll never have a relationship with them. Now, the question becomes, is that scalable? For me, yes, absolutely it is scalable, because I'm not sitting here trying to be a billionaire off of somebody that's buying my program for $47. I was giving it away for the longest time. You know, I had all these people looking at me like, Clark, why are you giving this away? And I'm like, because I can, because I want to, because there are people in need. And I have a solution for a problem. And I would be selfish if I didn't allow people to come in who were asking me for help, you know, and it flies in the face of conventional business protocol, but I'm okay with that, you know?
I would imagine there's a part of you, you mentioned servant leadership, which I think is a really powerful word. And I would hope that people in this space and all leaders really learn what that means and learn how to serve others. And it doesn't mean enabling them, it's empowering them, but serving them, I think, is a really, really powerful thing. I would also imagine there's a part of your personality, just based on being a Marine as your background, that you're a protector, that this is, you almost feel like a duty to, hey, somebody can't afford the program, here, take the program, you know, come on in, let me help you out.
Yeah. And plus, helping them understand what I understand from an insider's perspective. There are a lot of slick marketers out there that don't care. right? They'll sell a program, they'll deliver the program, but that's pretty much the end of the transaction at that point. Well, we got to understand on the other side of that transaction is a person who doesn't have any clue in many cases as to how to apply this new knowledge that they've just received into their lifestyle. You know, maybe they, like I just heard the trash trucks go by. Maybe they get up every morning at 3 a.m. and they drive a garbage truck taking care of our garbage that we throw outside. And that's his life. He doesn't understand what a macro is, you know, and it, right? We need to slowly bring people into a world to help them understand, like, it's not as scary as you've made it out to be. It's not as complicated as you think it is. It's a whole lot easier. And all I need you to do is this, and we can get you going. So that's a big disconnect there for me when someone just gets a program and then they're left to their own devices to try and figure out.
Yeah. Good luck to you. That, you know, I struggle with this because I do a weekly Zoom check-in with my people and I want more people to get on the call, you know, but it's like the core group of guys get on there and I'm like, where's everybody else? Like you spent money, you bought the program, get your butts in here. Like how have you been able to rally the troops and get more people? Because I think the thought may be, and I don't know, maybe they've been burnt in the past with a program or whatever. That's like, oh yeah, you have weekly interactions. Like, no, I want to see your face. I want to know who I'm affecting. I want to talk to you. I want to help. Like, you know, how have you gotten over that maybe barrier that customers have coming to you or clients have coming to you that say, this is real. This guy actually is here weekly and he wants to assist the best that he can. How have you done that?
Yeah. Well, it's the Pareto principle, right? 20% of the people do 80% of the work. 20% of the people have 80% of the wealth, blah, blah. So what I do is what I had mentioned earlier. I get in their face and I tell them, look, you signed up for this program. Why are you not showing up to these Zoom calls? Unless you have something with your family or your work that I agree is more important than this, you need to be here. You need to show up. So the new statistic now in marketing, it used to be like 6 times you had to like drip on somebody to get them to respond to your offer. Right. I think it's like 38 now. You have to touch somebody 38 times because there's so much noise in this world that is confusing people and distracting people from the message you're trying to get across. So I'll give you a percentage so you feel good. And someone gave me a percentage the other day that made me feel good. I've got close to 11,000 guys in my group. I have about 100 show up on Saturdays. So I was a little frustrated by that until somebody reached out to me and said that they were on a Zoom with Brené Brown and Tony Robbins, who we know have millions and millions of followers. He said there were 30 people on the Zoom call. Okay. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I've got a high turnout rate for these Zoom calls. And the more these men who are not on the Zoom calls hear about how awesome each one is and everyone gets better, they're thinking, they get FOMO, right? They got the fear of missing out. They're like, what am I missing out on? And then they show up. And I've got this ability when I'm on the Zoom to kind of scan through the gallery and see a guy that I need to put on the hot seat and commit to a process. And it's usually pretty spot on. I'll say, okay, Nick, I see you sitting there. Yeah, you, Nick, unmute your mic. I need you to introduce yourself. I need you to tell everyone why you're here. I need you to commit to this process. And then they open up and then they feel comfortable because just like the gym threshold, that door, when you open it up, for a lot of people, the threshold from outside of the gym to the inside of the gym is the biggest step many people will make. Entering a Zoom call with an 11-year NFL center who's got this reputation, that's a big step, man. People are intimidated. People are scared. People are worried that they're not going to be what, you know, so they, if they show up, they'll sit around and be quiet for a long time. It's our job to shake the bushes and get them out and get them actively participating in this process that we've offered them.
That's good. I like the call out, basically. Hey, why are you here? I've seen you on multiple weeks in a row. Why are you here? Yeah.
You're only committed to what you confess. I had a mentor years ago by the name of Ed Cole, great, great man of God that really burned that into me and a big group of men that he was discipling, basically. He said, you're only committed to what you confess. So if you're going to do something, you need to let people know you're doing it. So you're now at a higher level of expectation, because if you just leave it to yourself, you're like, yeah, I don't need to do this. Nobody knows. So that's what I require.
It's easy to quit.
It's easy to quit. And I require that when men come into my Facebook group, that they shoot a video and they say, hey, my name is Clark. I'm from San Diego. I'm here because I want to do X, Y, Z, and I need your help because I typically act this way. Boom. And now we know. So then what we do is we put them into huddles. We make the big group into smaller groups, and I have leaders step up and run these huddles. And then that's where the real magic happens, is in the smaller group. So if you don't have huddles within your group, you should really start incorporating that.
That's brilliant. Yeah, because we've had some guys that have been around for a long time that have had a lot of success. My first guy ever in our program lost 100 pounds in 7 months, and he's a real force. You know, he's like a, when he speaks, everybody listens. So you almost got to give them, make them a captain of a huddle. I like that concept.
You absolutely must. I'm telling you, brother, when we're done here, that's something that I would encourage you to get started in your group right away, because those men need to step up and they need to start leading, because the reality is we're robbing the world of their gift if we don't allow them a platform that we've, you know, basically facilitated. But then it becomes our job to create these leaders. And I tell men when they come into my group, I'm like, listen, you're going to be leading a fitness program. And they're like, me? And I'm like, yeah, you watch and see. Give it 3-4 months and you're going to be someone who's taking a new guy that's coming in like you were when you came in, and you're going to be helping him through this process. And I need you. So I've got a guy in my group that manages all of the huddles. And this guy, you know, he's a former college wrestler. He's an athlete. He's a military guy. He let himself go. And he needs this again, and especially now,
it gives him purpose. Oh, wow. Yeah. And I'm sure it gives him a great sense of purpose.
Exactly.
Yeah. And identity. That's really incredible. Clark, what's your day look like? What's a standard day look like?
You know, I did a podcast yesterday. It was a radio show back in Columbus, Ohio, I think. And the guy said, you must be the most organized person in the world, because I see all of these things that you do. And I'm like, I am the least organized person you'll ever meet. I have no plan, no structure, no nothing. I fly by the seat of my pants. So after this, I'm going to go to the gym, and I train with my son. And it's so awesome to be able to go into the gym with my son and work out, because, you know, after football, he was done with working out. He was done with all of that and he swore he would never go to the gym again. But suddenly he got this desire. And he never wanted muscles, because he grew up with a dad with muscles. And so he and I get to go to the gym together. So then from there, I'll come home and I'll do some emails and I'll do some Facebook stuff with my community. And today I'm going to record 3 or 4 meditations. I'm recording several hundred meditations right now for my app and my membership program. And then after that, I might sit on the couch and, you know, watch some mindless TV. I love me some Dr. Phil. So when 3 o'clock hits, I'll watch Dr. Phil, depending on the episode. And then from there, you know, I'll go out and I'll do some more cardio in the home gym. And I've got a board meeting that just popped up on my calendar here. So I'll accept this right now and I'll do that. So I really don't plan my days. And people might be looking at me like, dude, you would get so much more out of your life if you planned your days. I prefer not to.
And if it's not your person, it's the same thing as the nutrition and the fitness. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work. You know, everyone's got, you have to do this. You have to wake up at this time. You have to do this before. It's like, before I go to work? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm with you. I do things more intuitively, more by feel. And hey, sometimes my body it wakes up at 4:30 and it wants to hit the ground running. Some days, like latest I'll get up is 5:30, but you know, I may not work out till 2 PM. Just depend, you know, it depends how it goes. And then I kind of feel my day out with the work and videos and podcasts. And, you know, hopefully I've gotten better at scheduling those, but you're right. It's like, I fly by the seat of my pants every day, and it's kind of a fun little ride.
Well, you lived such a structured life for so many years, you know, high school football, college football, professional football. It's like, be here, do this, say this, do that. Don't say this, do this. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, I'm done. You know what I mean? So let's talk about your transformation. From how much did you weigh at your peak compared to how much you weigh now? And how do you feel differently?
Yeah.
From so, being that guy.
Yeah. My highest, I was 308, and it was after I had a Liz Frank surgery. So I dislocated my midfoot, tore multiple ligaments in there, had a plate 7 screws through wires, non-weight bearing for 12 weeks. And I was still pumping up real heavy in the weight room, got to 308. And then when I got done, I got put on injured reserve my week one, my 11th year. And it was in 2014. And from then, it was the last season of my career. It was the last year of my contract. So I knew I was going to be done. And so I immediately just started chipping this weight off. And I lost over 85 pounds in 5 months. And I showed up at my retirement press conference at 208 pounds. And it was a little skinny. My lowest was 202. And that was after a hot yoga class. And I remember I stood on the scale. I looked at the numbers 202, and I obviously wasn't playing anymore. And it was the only thing I could compete with was the weight and that number on the scale. And I thought, 3 more pounds, you're going to get to 199. And I showed up to college at 195, and I was a Marine Corps ROTC scholarship kid. So I wanted to be a Marine. My friend asked me to walk onto the football team. That's how I started playing football. It was my fourth semester. So I walked on at 230. And so now I'm back. Once I got on the scale at 202, I was like, 3 more pounds, this is going to happen. And I turned to the side and I looked at myself and I was like, oh my God, you look horrible. It's like, go home and start eating right away. And so I've slowly put it back on the way that I wanted to, but got up to 230. And this is the exact weight that I walked onto the football team at Purdue at, 229. And it's just really sustainable, supernatural for me. And I can basically do what I want, eat what I want, and live how I want. And this is more or less me. So I stay, I'm not quite ever magazine cover ready, but I am, I do stay within striking distance of it.
That's important, right? So
yeah,
I guess the question that I have is, how did you feel like it's such a heavy weight? Did you feel like you were kind of pushing the limits of, because the NFL asks so much from you. Totally. And you kind of got to do things that aren't necessarily natural to the human body. Did you feel like you were kind of pushing the envelope on health when you were?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I gave myself hypothyroidism. I was pre-diabetic. I mean, I was eating 6,000 to 8,000 calories a day just to maintain my size. I was lifting hard 6 days a week, hypertrophy training, strength training early in the week. And just really, it was nonstop. And the crazy thing is, you can go back through the pictures of my career, and I do this. We've got photo albums, and my boys and I, they busted them out the other day on me. And so I got to look at myself as a rookie until I retired. And the way the body changed over time, and it wasn't that I got much heavier. I probably put on maybe 10 pounds over the course of my career, but the location of that weight change. So at first it was lean in the middle, no real love handles, big, thick thighs, big shoulders and chest. And then eventually it went from like this V to like this kind of mushy block. And then it turned into kind of like, not an hourglass figure. It turned into like a pear. So, you know, the body started shifting, and a lot of that you come to realize, and this is part of the reason I did the podcast in the first place, was what was going on from a physiological, from a neurological standpoint. And what you find out is all those hits to the head really suck the life out of your testosterone levels. And so you could see that physically show up on my body. It's like all the head hits, but then you can't train as hard, which then again affects your testosterone levels, your growth hormone levels, because you physically can't. There's just, it hurts too bad to train the way that you did when you were young. So you couldn't go as hard, and your body's just kind of, you're by the end of it, by the end of 11 years, you just are holding on. And I knew, I mean, I was 171 pound wrestler my high school senior year. I got second in the state of Indiana. I was shredded. I was under 8% body fat. I looked really good and could do anything. I was like, I felt like Spider-Man. I could climb ropes with my hands with no feet on them. And then I gained 120 pounds to play in the NFL. Well, then you climb a flight of stairs and all of a sudden you're sweating, you're out of breath, your legs are chafing, you can't find clothes that fit. And just eating enough to stay that big was a full-time job. So I knew it wasn't healthy. And so I had to go immediately, right when I knew my career was done. It's like, get this weight off. It's time to go. Got to. And our tagline is reclaim your health, reclaim your life. And all of the life that's opened up to me since I've lost the weight has, I mean, really, it's been quite the blessing.
What about the head hits, right? I'm friends with Gary Plummer, and Gary estimates he's had over 1,500 concussions throughout his career, right? And people often associate a concussion with being knocked out, when you know as well as I do, every time you get hit, right, you're concussed on some level.
Yes.
And actually, Steve Hendrickson used to live across the street from me, and we all know that story.
Yep.
And Steve probably was concussed more than any person on the planet with the different grades of concussions.
When those guys played too, the helmets were awful, and helmets were never designed to stop or prevent concussions. They were meant to stop skull fractures. They're still not. Like, we still, as a human, really can't take head hits. We're just not designed to do that. I estimated that I had 30,000 hits to the head between college and professional football, between off-season workouts, OTAs, mini camps, all of those, spring ball in college, in-season training camps, and then the games. 30,000 hits to the head, because as a center, you can't avoid it. Right. It's unavoidable. And I went, after I was done, I was struggling a little bit, like 3 or 4 years after I got done, where I was having a difficult time completing some of my thoughts. You know, you go on little tangents and then you would get off the rails and you go, what was my original thought there? Where was I trying to go with that? And I went and got an EEG, scanned my brain waves, and figured out that I had suffered a pretty good amount of damage to the front right temporal area of my brain. And it was no surprise to me, because you always have a nose guard lined up right here. I snap with my right hand. He's 2 inches from my head. So I can't even protect my head if I wanted to. My head, in fact, just kind of became my de facto right hand. It was like, throw it in there and do your best to recover after you've been smashed in the face. So it's, there's no doubt in my mind that it's a dangerous sport, that it's an unhealthy sport, but
do you want your boys to play?
They're playing. I'd prefer they didn't. They're 10-8. I'd prefer they didn't, but it's hard to tell them not to when they look around and everything that we've got in our life is because of football. And I try to tell them, I say, look around our neighborhood. We're not the richest ones in here. Everybody in this neighborhood is making more money than dad, has made more money than dad, and not one of them plays professional sports. So there's a million ways to make $1 million and have a really happy, successful life. It's up to you to kind of figure that out. But the other side of it is they really like it. They're super into it. And who am I to tell them not to do it? You know, I mean,
yeah. You know, the reality is, too, I was looking at your Instagram stories yesterday, and you had made a comment about your wife. When she sees weight, she has to pick it up, right?
Yeah,
you've got DNA that has been put down into these young men. You can't fight DNA. You can't fight this athletic or competitive desire that was put into them by the combination of you and your wife, who are both competitive people, have to do things. You see a weight, you got to pick it up. It's hard to shut that part of a human down, regardless of whether they're 8 or 10 or 18 and 20, you know?
Yeah. And it's up to them to learn, you know, it's up to them to either have the success or to fail. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say that I have a hand in it, it's their life. You know, they do ultimately get to make decisions, and I try to put them in the best position possible to have as much success as they can and whatever they choose to do. And I honestly don't care what they choose to do. How did you manage? Because this is something that I think, you know, you said your son didn't want to have muscles growing up because he grew up in a house with his dad who's got muscles. How did you manage that side of things? How did you manage, you know, I know what good food is, I know what a good lifestyle is, but here he is. I thought you said he was 28. Now he's come back to you and he's like, hey, let's go work out together. How did you manage raising him while you were doing all that?
Yeah. So I've got a 30-year-old daughter, and Mitch will be 27 here soon. And I realized at a certain stage in their young life, probably around the age your boys are, that I needed to allow them to live their life. I didn't need to structure everything they ate and everything they did. I didn't want to be that dad that my dad was to me, that was just always like, boom, 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 you know, and he had good intentions, but they came right. off wrong as it related to a lot of what he expected from me in my life. So I kind of gave them freedom to be themselves, but there was always this expectation that I never knew about that came from other people. Like when my kids played high school sports, I was always there because I could be there. So I coached in the weight room. I was on the football field warming my son up before games. I was there with my daughter at her track meets. And so when you look like you do, you stand out. And when you are who you are, you stand out. Oh, didn't, you know, what are your boys' names?
Hudson and Teddy.
Hudson and Teddy. Didn't Hudson and Teddy's dad play professional football? Now there's this expectation on Hudson and Teddy, right. much like my kids had an expectation. Mitch, why aren't you buff like your dad? You know, my son's tall and lean. And he's like, dude, I don't know. This is just me. So I tried to back away as much as possible and not, but I didn't want to not be a part of their life in that those fun times. Like when my son played college ball, I'd fly back to Illinois every weekend for the games or go travel wherever he was at to be at the games. But it was because I was in shape, his buddies would be like, damn, bro, look at your dad, look at your dad, you know? And I didn't realize that I was putting this pressure on this poor guy his whole life, you know? And I didn't mean to, it's not like I was trying to, it was just by nature of who I am. And he's a very quiet leader. I'm a very loud leader. Like he would go off and play and just be the guy that got respect because of his play. If I go out there today, if I catch a pass, I'm screaming and yelling, woo, yeah, let's go. You know, I'm the complete opposite of him. And I think he might be a little bit shy or reserved because I'm the complete opposite. So as much as we want to have, man, it's just going to play out how it plays out. There's really no That's way right. to manage it, man. There isn't, you know, and eventually they come back around full circle and they realize what a gift it is to have a dad who played in the NFL for years and provided the lifestyle and all that sort of thing. Because there will be a point in time where when your boys grow up, the relationship changes, the dynamic changes a little bit. And you're always going to be Nick Hardwick and you're always going to be a physical specimen and a mindset guy. And sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. You just got to continue to move forward.
Well, Clark, I got to tell you, we're going to wrap it up, but two things. One, I really look up to you. I admire the work that you do and the purpose that you have in life. I think it's really awesome. Who do you look up to at 58? Who are you looking up to now? Who are some of your idols?
So the one person that I really looked up to for years, I had his wife, his widow on my Zoom call a few weeks ago. And her name is Elaine LaLanne and his name was Jack LaLanne. And many people watching this won't even know who that is. And even though he's no longer with us, he's still my mentor, my role model, the person that I look to emulate as it relates to how I want to interact with people with the message and the gift that I have of being a fit guy, sharing with people that they can also be a fit person. Jack LaLanne was someone that I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with. We traveled the country together. He was on my TV show. He taught me so much about how to interact with people. And the message of health and fitness is a simple one. It doesn't need to be complicated. We just need to move. So when I get frustrated in business or I feel like my message isn't being heard or I want it to be heard by more people, I take a step back and I remember the days with Jack and I think about how he got his message across. And it was really interesting because I'm doing the same thing Jack did. He pulled boats across from Alcatraz to San Francisco. I throw footballs into trash cans or long snap them into my Jeep. You know, I do these stunts, we'll call them, to get the attention of people to then drive home a message of hope and encouragement and the opportunity to change the way you exist on this planet. So that's my guy.
Oh, fantastic. Clark, where can people learn more? Where can people get into the 6-week program and join your community?
So it's 6weeksolution.nanotest.co, CO, not COM. And yeah, you can find me on Instagram, just Clark Bartram, TikTok, the real Clark Bartram. So yeah, come in and just check it out and see what you think.
Clark, thank you so much for the wisdom and the knowledge and the time that you shared with us. I appreciate you.
Let's go, brother. I appreciate it, man.
Keep it up.
I'm going to have you on my Zoom call.
Anytime. You just let me know when.